If you've ever watched the Rugrats,
this podcast is not suitable for children or those who are easily disturbed. Spoiler warning for whatever is in the title of this episode.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to the horrorofbabylonpodcast@gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible and all other major podcast apps.
Welcome to episode 90 of The Horror of Babylon, where we are reviewing Legion by William Peter Blatty. I am Ryan, and with me as always is Daniel. Say hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
That's a Coke. Don't get excited.
You're breaking the illusion.
Thank you to our patrons, Abigail the First, Breaker of Chains, Mother of Illusions, and...
Logan,
the Full Metal Patron. And Ben!
The patron of hope.
The patron of hope.
Oh my god, I forgot Ben was here.
Ben's here?
No, I just met on the list.
Ben? Ben Kenobi?
Sorry. I make that reference to him all the time and he never gets it.
Been there. Okay, and thank you to Four Horsemen Comics and Gaming, which you can visit at the Morgantown Mall in Morgans, Virginia, the Mall Robinson in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I just heard that a third location is opening in San Antonio, Texas, and Daniel's going to be operating that as the assistant manager.
I don't think you should trust me to be a manager of anything.
No, you're going to be the assistant.
Oh, I could be Hank Hill, yeah.
Or maybe you'll be the assistant to the manager and you'll be Dwight Schrute instead.
Who was the drug addict that Hank hired?
Yeah.
I'll be that guy.
I remember that. Yeah. You can be him. That'd be fun. But if you do visit Four Horsemen, say hello to the proprietor, Ronald III, Grampus of Christmas. And we're going to kick this off with our history of Legion. And I can be quick. I've never read this book before. I did see the movie that it was adapted to, which is The Exorcist 3. As a kid, I remember two things about the movie. There's an asylum in it.
Yep.
And I think I liked it. So that was my basis. Well, that and obviously The Exorcist, but that was my basis going into this book.
I've seen The Exorcist 3 several times. I knew that it was... I didn't know it was based off of a book for the longest time. I did know that it was directed by the writer of the book, which I thought was cool. It's probably in my top five favorite horror movies. It's going to be hard for me to rank, especially how we do this, where we sort of rank in the moment. Mm-hmm. How do we feel about this now? No ties. We have some pretty stringent rules when it comes to our rankings.
That's why I usually tend to rank them ahead of time, so I'm not coming up with it on the spot.
I like to feel the emotional impulse. I feel like it creates like subconscious honesty from me. Mm.
I think it would be the opposite for me, because, or at least with things that I want to be nice about. I think I'm going to be more honest if I make the decision by myself and then just have to say it.
Yeah, plus there's recency bias when it's something we just watched. We didn't have that problem with some of the Alien movies, but...
No, and I am willing to update it, like, if my opinion changes through the discussion, which has happened.
Yeah, that happened to me in the...
Chapel Wait.
The more you talked about it, the more I ended up liking it.
Should just watch it together so I could be like, man, this is so cool. Look at that. It's so sweet.
The vampires are pure myth, superstition. I may be able to bring you proof that the superstition of yesterday can become the scientific reality of today.
All right, going into background. This novel was published in 1983, 12 years after The Exorcist was published in 1971. So I couldn't actually find a ton of information on the novel. Most things talk about the movie. All I could really find were reviews of the book, and the Wikipedia page, you can read the whole thing in less than 5 minutes.
It's not as extensive.
No. So kind of the key thing, takeaways of the background of this book were that it's Blatty was inspired by the Zodiac Killer.
Yep.
And Blatty sued the New York Times over this book because apparently it did enough sales to make the New York Times bestseller list. For whatever reason, the New York Times did not want to include it on the list, and they told him that it's not just a list of sales figures, it's editorial content, so we can exclude,
pick and choose.
Yeah. He actually sued them. The New York Supreme Court sided with the New York Times. Blatty appealed it to the Supreme Court, and they declined to hear the case. They said, no, go back to your corner, William Peter Blatty. We don't care about this.
I think my homework answer may have just changed. So I'm going to get on my soapbox for a minute. I am very pro-artist.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be known as an artist. It's one of my dreams. I do think artists start to get this sort of entitled attitude, and that's exactly what it sounds like to me.
I agree.
But I don't know the full context, but just from what you told me.
That portion of the Wikipedia article is very short. There's not a ton of information. That was basically all of it.
Yeah.
I was not aware that the New York Times bestsellers list was an editorial content. I thought it was just a list of the best-selling books. Maybe that's because they very rarely not include a book. I don't know. The only thing I could think of, and my guess, is that maybe a book about the Zodiac Killer was still a little bit sensitive, because this was published like 14 years after.
Yeah.
So maybe it was just a little bit too much of a sensitive topic, especially since like victims' families and such were still
alive.
Yeah.
I'm even more shocked that he kept going after he initially lost. Of course the Supreme Court doesn't give a fuck about this.
Yeah.
There have been some things that I've seen the Supreme Court listen to where I'm like, why do you give a fuck about this? But this is even lower than those.
So, and I was actually reading William Peter Blatty's Wikipedia page, yeah, and this fits with his personality. Another thing that he did, so he went to Georgetown University. And Georgetown University, when he was a student, but had some pro-abortion speakers speak at the university. And William Peter Blatty submitted an official complaint to the Vatican, to the Pope. And the Pope told him to go back to his corner.
Isn't Georgetown University a Catholic school?
Yeah.
That surprises me that they would accept them.
Well, I don't...
At least back then, because there's been a very hardline stance with that.
Let me get the actual, like...
Like, article?
Because I don't think it was, like, they were there speaking abortion.
Oh, they just were... They happened to have that stance.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then that makes more sense to me.
But let me just...
Double check.
Blatty was a Roman Catholic. In 2012... So, not when he was a student. When he was an old man. In 2012, he filed a canon law petition against his alma mater, Georgetown University, which he had said been at variance with the Catholic Church teaching for decades, inviting speakers who support abortion rights and disobeying Pope John Paul II's instructions issued to church-affiliated colleges and universities in 1990. The Vatican rejected the petition in 2014. In a response letter to Blatty, Archbishop Angelo Zani stated that this was because Blatty had not suffered an objective change at Georgetown's hands, but acknowledged that Blatty's case constituted a well-founded complaint. So,
okay. But it does seem, now that you're saying this, in line with his personality.
Yeah. Petty.
He doesn't like something, he will file something.
Which do you like better? William Petty Blatter? William Peter Blatty? Or William... I'm sorry. Okay, I'm going to do this. Let me do this.
I believe in you.
William Petty Blatty? Or William Peter Petty?
William Peter Petty.
Yeah, okay. William Peter Petty.
Cool. Okay.
All right.
Okay. I think both of those are pretty funny.
And that's that. Another story in the classic infallible three-act structure. Good enough for Aristotle, good enough for The Simpsons.
Mr. Sizlak, I have a feeling there's going to be one more act to this story.
Well, I'm not hanging around for that. Four acts.
And a structure and themes. Why don't you just tell me a little bit about the themes of this book?
The biggest theme is the one it wears on its sleeve, and that's the nature of evil.
Mm-hmm.
There are entire paragraphs of characters just pondering on the nature of evil and its origins. Afterlife is a big theme, and the nature of the soul versus the nature of the human brain, which sort of ties back into The Exorcist with the faith versus science aspect.
Yeah.
This one's a little bit more, I don't know, you'd say, maybe heavy-handed with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that the right phrase I'm looking for?
I think so.
Okay.
There are a lot more rants and monologues and...
It followed the rant character.
philosophical discussions.
Yeah.
And discourse.
Yeah.
It tended to go off on tangents as opposed to following the plot of the story.
Yeah.
It shares some themes with The Exorcist. Psychology.
Psychology is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed those segments.
I imagine you got a lot more out of them than I did.
This book was basically things Daniel has been interested in since college, the book.
I had Psych 101. And my professor was talking about PTSD and said, you know what we should do? We should watch Born on the 4th of July. So we spent like four classes watching Born on the 4th of July. that's my psychology education.
I had I don't know if I want to say better, I guess more intensive Psych 101 course. I still remember it to this day. Required a lot of papers for a 101 course.
We wrote zero papers.
Yeah. I think we were doing a paper a day. Or not a day, like one was due a class.
She lectured and we had a midterm exam and a final exam. And that was the whole class.
Neat.
Yeah, it's fine. But it wasn't exactly inspirational.
Yeah.
But
didn't draw you in.
No, but that's okay. That's not psychology's fault. That's the professor's fault.
Yeah.
Religion
also
returns.
Fish. Fish is a theme. I refuse to acknowledge otherwise.
Carp?
Yeah. The carp is still in the tub.
The carp is still in the tub.
I thought that was supposed to be a euphemism or
no,
maybe
it's
like
literal.
For the longest time when I was reading the book, I was going, I can't wait to hear the backstory on when this phrase came up and what it actually means when he's saying it to his friend and then he actually sees the fish.
I'm actually going to spoil my king a little bit. Actually, it's this or one other thing might be my king. But when he thinks that the Gemini killer is going to kill his family,
yeah,
and he shows up at his front door and he has his gun out and his wife opens the door and sets the gun and says... Bill, the carp is dead.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
She thought he finally snapped from it.
Exorcism?
Sort of. It's, the exorcism is not a Catholic sort of exorcism. Which is probably okay since the main character is Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
Though his best friend in the book is a priest.
Was.
Yeah, was. Was a priest. It's hard. It's very sort of psychological in its exorcism pinnings.
I didn't really understand the exorcism.
It's very different in both versions of the movie.
There's a theatrical and then there's a William Peter Blatty cut of the movie, isn't there?
Yeah, the William Peter Blatty cut is much closer to the book. They add an actual exorcism scene in the theatrical cut because they called it The Exorcist and there's no exorcism in...
Yeah, let's jump to this next question.
Yeah.
Next two.
Yeah.
How is this a sequel and how is it not?
How it's a sequel is it's a sequel in the most literal sense. It takes place in the same universe. Follows a character from the book or from the first book. Not the main characters. He was one of the side characters.
Mm-hmm.
One of the bigger side characters but still... He was a subplot in the book. And it follows a bunch of the tertiary characters from the first book and how they were, like, sort of related to
Father Dyer.
Yeah, Father Dyer. And how they were related to the incident. Mm-hmm. And how a bunch of the victims of the killings were sort of related to the exorcism.
The son of the woman who discovered that Reagan's tapes were actually English backwards, who's not, I don't even think is a named character.
Yeah, she's
in
not.
In The Exorcist.
Yeah.
So, the most of the time I'm reading it, I'm like, this is a spinoff. This is not a sequel. Until, the last, act. And I'm like, oh.
Karis.
It is a sequel. But it's like the slowest of burniest of sequels.
Is this? You think Pet Sematary is a slow burn?
I want F to read this book.
This is like a third of the length, and it burns slower.
I want to just watch F read it, and watch him squirm in his seat.
Okay, we should make that a Patreon stretch goal. F live reading the.
But he's not allowed to read The Exorcist. He just has to read this.
Just reads Legion.
Oh, that sounds awful.
It sounds really funny to do to him, though.
How is it not a sequel?
That's for me answering that, I feel, is a little complicated. A lot of that has to do with its themes and how it tells the story. It almost feels like it was written by a different person at times.
I completely agree. I actually was going, did he actually write this book? Because it felt like two different authors.
You remember how I was talking about how he sort of wrote in fragmented sentences in the first book, and I thought that was super neat? Because he did it for, punctual emphasis. Mm-hmm. There's almost none of that. I was reading the actual physical copies. There's almost none of that.
And I did the audiobook, and I don't tend to notice that as... This one was not read by William Peter Blatty.
Yeah.
And the guy who wrote it didn't do any voices or anything. He just straight read it. He didn't do any terrible, horrible Jewish accent for Kinderman. So they almost felt like different characters because the narrators were so different. But
I bet that sounded better.
It did. It was a lot less distracting.
I do like it when voice actors, when they read an audiobook, do something with voices. But that is also a fine line to walk, because sometimes it can be really bad.
Yeah, sometimes it can just be super distracting.
Sometimes it can be Maymay.
I love Maymay.
I love that.
I screw you, I love that.
I love that audiobook so much. I can just see it going over poorly with some people.
I'll screw those people. Yeah, it's fun.
They can't have fun. But yeah, it has a lot to do with the themes and the way it was written for me. To where, if you change the names of some characters, or even just one or two characters, be 100% unrelated.
I wish we would have done our episode on The Exorcist 2 before this book.
Yeah.
Because that movie happened before this book was published.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure this was 1983.
I mean, I believe you, but we can look it up. I just think that's sort of surprising. Yeah, 1990.
1977.
Okay, so The Heretic. Yeah, I can't wait for that one.
Okay, so that's... I've got to make an effort to do this better in the future, but...
Yeah.
So the timeline is 1971, The Exorcist novel. 1973, The Exorcist film. 1977, Star Wars. Also, also Exorcist 2, The Heretic. 1983 is Legion, and 1990 is The Exorcist 3.
Okay.
So he had, spoiler, The Exorcist 2 continues Reagan's story, and William Peter Blatty had no involvement with it whatsoever. It's not based on one of his books, and he wasn't a writer, producer, any of that stuff.
He wrote this book out of spite. I don't know if that's true.
So Legion does nothing to continue Chris and Reagan's stories. You get Kinderman, and then at the end, you find out what happened to Father Karis.
In which that can be fine.
Yeah.
To not follow the main characters for a sequel. I just think that that's sort of a weirder balance to walk.
It is. I'm also, how I got on this tangent, I'm wondering if Exorcist II The Heretic had never been made, would he have written a story, if not about Reagan and Chris, that would have involved them in some way? Or did he, want to purposely stay away from that completely because this movie exists?
Yeah. Or was he just inspired by the Zodiac killings and went, I want to tell a story about this. And he used the Exorcist as a sort of, like, jumping off point.
Yeah, because he could have been like, I don't really want to write a sequel to The Exorcist, but I do want to write a story about the Zodiac Killer. You know, The Exorcist is my most popular thing, and there is a police officer character that I could use, and then I'll just find some way to tie it into The Exorcist at the end.
The Gemini Killer. Which I do like the name. I do like the name.
I like the name, too.
Gemini.
That's Beck's zodiac sign. That's the twins?
Yeah, that's the twins.
Oh, actually, that really fits the themes of the book.
Yes.
Now that I'm thinking about it. That never occurred to me. That's smart.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Characters. Yeah. Let's talk about Lieutenant William Kinderman.
I got the sense when we were discussing this book that you were not a fan.
No, and it's not like I hate the man. I hate that he can't stay on point.
Yeah, near the beginning of the book, they're even talking about how the department thinks he's going senile.
Yeah, and honestly, partway through the book, I was really, like, wondering why they're still putting up with this guy.
Yeah.
It was around the time when he was strangling that little boy's mom. I don't think that the character is, like, poorly written or anything, but it's just, there are so many tangents and monologues and rants and, like, going in off on this and talking about that. And, like, all the stuff that annoyed in the first book, but, like, to the umpteenth degree because this is his book. And I didn't really like the way that he, like, treats all the other cops.
Yeah. I will say, in my very limited experience, older cops or detectives do treat anyone below them like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's true.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean you have to like them.
Yeah. Like, there were points where he just came across as, like, a legitimate bully.
There's a lot of bully culture in policing, which I'm sure surprises no one.
Points where it didn't make sense for him to do the things that he did, but it felt like Blatty wrote it in that way because that's what Kinderman would do. For instance, when he first meets, he's going to visit Father Dyer, and he meets Dr. Amfortas, and he learns that...
So that's how you pronounce that.
Yes.
Awesome.
He learns that Dr. Amfortas attends that church and was at the service where the priest was killed.
Yeah, the beheading.
And he wants the guy who owns the restaurant to ID him.
Yeah.
Instead of just going to the restaurant and saying, hey, come over to the hospital, I want you to look at this guy. He has to do this, like, annoying, god-awful, come up with a reason to get the doctor to come out to lunch, to go to this restaurant where the guy who can ID you owns there, then, like, just come up with all these terrible reasons to get him to sit down and keep talking, and he keeps trying to get up, and you're like, no, let's talk about this. Waitress, can you go get Mr. Blah, blah, blah? He's just like, oh my god, dude.
I actually love that. That's one of my favorite parts of the book.
That's my coons.
It's a disarming tactic so that the doctor will still trust him later if he has to keep investigating him instead of having his guard up.
That's totally unnecessary because he wouldn't even have to say anything to Dr. Amfortas. He and the guy who owns the restaurant could literally just go to the hospital and say, you see that guy down the hall there?
Yeah.
Is that him? Did you see him at the church? Yes, no? Okay, we're done.
To me, it just came across as a moment of opportunity. He sees the doctor, learns that, gets the idea in his head, and he acts on it as all of a, I can do this right now sort of thing.
But he could have gone to the restaurant
and grabbed the... That's a lot of running back and forth.
It's back and forth.
Yeah.
But that's what he does with the doctor. They go to the restaurant, and then they go back to the hotel or to the hospital.
Yeah.
It's the same.
But the doctor, he might not have been able to find the doctor later, so he sticks on him, makes him stay with him, so that he can make sure that it happens while he has him.
Then he could have gotten one of the pictures off the wall. Like, have you ever been to a hospital? They have their doctor's pictures all over the place.
Yeah, maybe he didn't think that. I think that's incredibly clever.
I think it's a huge waste of time and absolutely boring to read.
I found his detective work to be incredibly clever in how he does it. especially when he's talking to the psychologist. Well, both of them, because they're both psychiatrists.
Well, or, and no, Fortis is a neurologist.
A neurologist, and the other one's a psychiatrist.
Temple is a psychologist.
And how he talks about previous cases.
I'm sorry, he's a psychiatrist.
And how the only people who could possibly know how certain killings were done were these people. Because, spoiler alert, the police don't always give you all the details of a killing, so they have something to, like, weed people out from confessions.
My comprehension in the latter half of this book was very low.
I'm glad. That means I got something to talk about.
I understood almost none of what I read, and I had to keep rewinding. It's like, what? What? What?
The one thing I really did not... I don't think that Blatty gets one thing across in the book that the movie does way better. At least in my opinion from, you know, my time seeing this movie. Is Kinderman is supposed to be constantly on edge because, you know, the Gemini killings are back and it was such a stressful thing. A lot of times in this book, he doesn't seem all that stressed out, except he's kind of a dick. In the movie, the actor really sells this is, like, weighing on him.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that was something that just was a little lacking in this for Kinderman.
Dr. Infortis.
This is where a lot of the confusing, semi-supernatural stuff comes up.
I didn't understand anything that happened with Dr. Infortis when he was seeing his double. I literally, like, it changed chapters.
Yeah.
And then he's, like, in his house and he sees his double. And I'm like, I literally do not know what's happening.
From what I'm able to garner, right? Kinderman has a dream where somebody tells him that we have two souls. And those are sort of... They exist in some sort of duality until they can become one after you die. That's pretty much as he wanted to write a scene where that is manifested. But how do you say this dude's name again? Amfortes.
Amfortes. Yeah.
Amfortes. And he's dismissing it as a psychological apparition because he's aware of it as being a symptom of certain, like, neurological problems. In the story proper, no, this is very literal. You have a second soul, and there it is.
What? I mean, the guy had a legion on his brain, so who's to say that Infortis wasn't right, and it was just him hallucinating?
I mean, I guess. I think it was supposed to be super literal.
Why don't you prove it to me? Why don't you touch me? Well, I can't do that.
It's against the rules.
It's against the rules. Oh, it's because I'm hallucinating. And
I loved backstory of him becoming obsessed with trying to hear the dead. Have you ever watched, like, ghost hunting videos where they try to, like, listen for voices on white noise?
Yeah.
It's starting to become kind of big around the time this book was written. And you have a neurologist trying to do it just because he misses his wife so much. I don't know if I would say that's creepy, but it's... I was really sort of interested when I was reading about it. And I liked how he was comparing it to the Tibetan Book of the Dead, where souls linger because they just are choosing not to move on.
I liked Infortis because he wasn't Kinderman. It's like, oh, we get him from Kinderman. I enjoyed, like, him in the first part of the book, but then it kind of just didn't go anywhere. Kinderman interviews him a couple times because he thinks he's involved, and turns out he's not involved. And
oh, no, he's 100% involved.
How is he involved?
At the end of the book, one of the coats that's found in his closet was the dude who was at the church beheading. The guy at the restaurant, yeah, missed ID'd him. I just didn't recognize him.
Okay, well,
yeah,
I completely missed that.
Yeah. The legion in his brain was affecting him so much that he would pass out for extended periods of time and couldn't remember where he was. Mm-hmm. And that's because the Gemini killer, whenever he would pass out, would slip into his body.
I didn't get that. I knew that he was doing that to the patients.
Yeah.
I never understood that he was doing that to Infortis.
Yeah, he also was doing it to Infortis. Okay. Or at least it seems that way based off of the evidence that's revealed at the end of the book.
So it never explicitly says that.
No. It's just... It strongly suggests it because it brings up that coat specifically, how the people remembered the guy wearing a certain color coat but not his face.
Okay, so he had a coat that was the same color.
Yeah, helped hide his face. And there is these scenes where after he would pass out and he'd get back up, his house would be different. There'd be like food laying out and a newspaper.
Well, that happens to me.
You live with other people.
I might have had a cat. Sunlight / the possessed dead body of Father Karras
/ the Gemini killer.
I was like, when's there going to be a devil? When's there going to be a demon? Where's Pazuzu? Where's the exorcist? I guess there's just None of that exists in this book.
No.
And then it's like, oh, here it is. But no, nothing ever happens with it.
Stuff happened with it throughout the whole book. Just you're not aware of it. He's possessing old people and sending them out to do his killings. It's an inverse of the title of there's many people inside of a single body, where he's one person going inside of a bunch of different bodies. It's Legion in the inverse. I think that's just an interesting idea, sort of as a reverse possession, or a possession being able to hop between bodies because of the way people's minds are, suggesting that, at least in this universe, psychological resistances to being possessed. So what happens when those defenses go down? Well, people can slip in. There's sort of a hint that the reason he's doing these killings is because somebody on the other side asked him to, which could have been Pazuzu, but it's never explicitly said.
He said that he wanted to do it to embarrass his father or something like that.
Well, that's the reason he started being the Gemini Killer in the first place, before he was shot off the bridge. And he's still doing it for that reason.
Oh, I didn't realize it was the same conscious person.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was just a demon copying the MO of the killer.
That could also be the case, but it's sort of suggested that he's doing it either because the demon on the other side told him to, or it's the demon fucking with Kinderman. But you're never given an explicit answer. Like the part in The Exorcist where Marin says there's no extra personalities, it's just one. Mm-hmm. So it could be a demon just lying to fuck with Kinderman. Mm-hmm. Or it could be that, like the Tibetan Book of the Dead, people who don't see the light and don't want to move on just don't, so they kind of linger around. And a demon helped him slip in so that he could do stuff to fuck with one of the people involved and torture Karis. Now, in this book, Karis doesn't seem like he's the inside at all.
He explicitly says that Karis is dead in the spiritual sense because he has left.
Yeah.
So what I understood, granted I have been wrong about almost everything, is that Karis is dead and whatever this thing is just has Karis's body.
Yeah, it's just puppeteering him.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the correct stance for the book.
I'll kill you all! I'll drive you crazy and I'll kill you all on every nightmare you ever had. I am your worst dream come true. I'm everything you ever were afraid of.
Scary shit. Is this book scary?
I don't think this book is very scary. I do think that there are a few things that I'm interested in that sort of creep me out. I told you, like, hearing voices on tapes would freak me out if they're explicitly impossible to be there. And Amfortes was sort of obsessed with that. But I enjoyed reading that section. I wish there would have been more stuff like that.
It just doesn't do it for me.
Old people cutting off my head sort of scares me. Working in a psych ward can be a little frightening, but that's a little too real because that's what I do for a living.
I think it would be scary if I had your job, but
yeah.
Other than I think this is probably, if not the least scariest book we've read, it's in the running for the least scariest book.
Yeah.
I guess it's scarier than River of Teeth.
The shit I took this morning was scarier than River of Teeth.
Yeah. Driving to Walmart is scarier than River of Teeth.
Yes.
Well, driving to Walmart's scarier than this book, too.
The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!
The power of Christ compels you.
If you want to have a book where a dude just rants about his views on religion, well, here it is.
If I didn't dislike Kinderman enough, he spends the first chapter trying to make me feel bad about not believing in God.
I did think that his answer of evil was sort of, I don't know if I'd say it's interesting, but I didn't see it coming.
So what is his? Because I'm sure I didn't understand it.
It ties back to the Tibetan Book of the Dead, where, you know, when people die, they see a light and you either join the light or you don't.
Okay.
And eventually you'll go back into the light.
Mm-hmm.
And the themes of the twin souls, you know, two things becoming one.
Mm-hmm.
His idea is that everything was originally one being, and that evil happens because we're split from that. And eventually it'll all become one, and what that one being is Lucifer, the fallen angel.
Okay, so we just interpreted that differently, because what I remember was that being his explanation for creation, being that there was one being who split himself into multiple beings, and that was the Big Bang, and we are all pieces of that one being.
Yeah, and that one being is supposed to be Lucifer, and that's where the evil is coming from.
So,
is we're all little at least in Kinderman's head, we're all little pieces of the devil.
So Lucifer created the universe?
When he fell from grace.
Oh my God, are you Stephen King?
No, I'm Dean Koontz.
Oh.
Kings and Koontz.
I like the psychology and the investigation aspects of this book.
I like Kinderman complaining about the fish and stuff.
Fish, yeah.
And I liked it when he brought Father Dyer a teddy bear he found in the road. It's like, I found this in the road. I thought it would suit you.
I saw this piece of garbage that reminded me of you.
And I also, when he bought Father Dyer, there's romance novels, and the girl at the counter was like, your wife will love these.
Thank you.
And he was like, I'm sure she will.
Like, what else do you say?
Yeah, exactly.
These are for my priest friend.
And my Koontz is the rest.
Okay, I'm going to say my Koontz is, and this might seem a little weird because a lot of people do die in this book, but I don't feel the threat in the same way as I did when we followed Reagan the entire time.
Do
you know
really
what I mean?
That many people die? Like, the boy and the two priests.
And a nurse is killed in the hospital.
So four?
Yeah. That's a decent kill count for a book.
Okay.
But I don't feel the threat in the same way as when we see Reagan being tortured for, like, 300 pages straight.
Yeah.
Where it's just, somebody died off screen. I'm investigating it.
Yeah.
The one you feel the most is Dyer, and that's because Sunlight walks Kinderman through how he did it. You gotta hold the legs up to squeeze out the blood.
Yeah, drains him to death with a catheter, which...
Yeah.
I give creativity points.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
Yeah. He drugged him, so...
Yeah, but still.
That's fine.
Still sounds awful.
Rankings, it's pretty low.
Pretty low, let me see it.
It's my number 23.
Wow.
I put it above Lolita and the Confederato. Honestly, I'm tempted to amend that and put Lolita above it. Because at least there's stuff to talk about with Lolita.
Our Lolita episode was pretty long.
Like, there's just nothing to say. Like, it's just blah.
Blah.
This book didn't make me physically ill like Lolita did.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll leave it as is. All right, so it's below Nothing But Blackened Teeth and above Lolita.
I mean, mine's also going to be low, but it's not going to be that low. I liked it more than Nothing But Blackened Teeth, Confederato, River of Teeth.
Even if you even think about which is better, it or Dowry.
I think I'm going to put it right below the Scarlet Plague.
So that's your new number 21 of below the Scarlet Plague and above A Dowry of Blood.
Everything else, there's just been some really good high points at least.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of good discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Where this was, well, here's a book that has a bunch of things you're interested in, Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't do a lot with it.
Yeah, there's just not a lot to talk about. This is going to be probably our shortest book episode.
Woo!
Homework. So the homework is, what soapbox do you have that you're pissed off about that you're willing to write a novel about it that's actually just propaganda posing as a novel?
Have you read Atlas Shrugged?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm basically just going to write that again.
Okay. What is the soapbox on Atlas Shrugged?
Poor people make the world worse and rich people make it better. I'm kidding. That's not really my soapbox. If you would have read Atlas Shrugged, I was going to just start describing it.
I've never heard of it.
It was written by an objectivist named Anne Rand. It's a piece of garbage.
Named Anne Rice?
Anne Rand.
Anne Rand.
Yeah.
I know that.
My actual soapbox probably would be, for those who don't know, I've been a member of the Libertarian Party ever since I left the Republican Party. So I'd probably just lean into that, going, I want freedom and all of its awful consequences, no matter what, for 200 pages.
Cool.
Yeah, that's my soapbox. I'd go, I will keep all of my and femboy husband and my marijuana plants.
Like a the waterfall guy from Futurama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's my book.
Yeah. All right. Cool. So for question for the listeners,
What's yours?
I don't have one.
You don't have a soapbox?
I mean, I do, but I would never write a book about it because it's a stupid way to write a novel. You don't believe me? See Legion. Question for the listeners. So we're doing something new to try and get some feedback. So we're going to start a versus series, which is like Daniel's favorite thing in the world.
I love it so much.
And like one of my least favorite things. Like I hate the discourse around versus things. But we're going to do it. We used to play a lot of local Magic the Gathering.
Yes, we did.
And we used to have a judge who, whenever you were paired against somebody who had the same name as you, he would always come over and say, okay, you guys are battling for your name. Whoever wins gets to keep the name.
Oh, that sounds so familiar. Who did that?
Josh.
Oh, that's right.
So we're going to do that with pop culture characters. This is called the Name Game Violence Edition.
I love this.
Give it a week. The hope is that people will come at us with answers, and then on the next episode we can say who won. We can give our opinions, but we don't decide this.
Okay.
All right, so our first matchup is Chucky Fenster from the Rugrats versus Chucky the Doll from the Child's Play franchise.
I have a question.
Okay.
Are these composite versions of themselves?
Meaning?
You include every iteration of the character?
No.
So we're going strictly with Rugrats version Chucky and main continuity Chucky.
I don't know enough about Child's Play continuity to... I'm just going to say yes.
There's a single reboot. Mm-hmm. And the TV show is sort of wishy-washy with what it includes.
I've only seen up to Bride of Chucky. I've seen nothing past Bride of Chucky. Okay.
I was more interested in it for Rugrats Chucky, if I included his like superhero imagination self, or his adult version.
So the main factor that I was thinking of is that if you've ever watched the Rugrats, the whole thing is that they walk away from their parents and almost die 1,000 times.
Yeah, no, I like that.
But manage to not do it. So I'm just curious about how Chucky the Rugrat is going to obliviously avoid being murdered.
I like this. I think this is a very good matchup.
Yeah, I do too.
I'm taking this to my versus debate forums later.
Okay, great. Do it. Okay, for further reading, what do you recommend if you enjoyed reading Legion?
God? No, paperback detective novels, probably. The sort you get at a drugstore that you've never heard about outside of seeing them at drugstores.
Cool. Coming on the Horror of Babylon, our next Sunday episode, September 17th, will be on Exorcist 2, The Heretic, the film sequel to The Exorcist.
Can't wait.
And then our next novel episode will be on Sunday, September 24th, my dad's birthday. Where we will be reviewing Five Nights at Freddy's, The Silver Eyes, which is the first of the Five Nights at Freddy's trilogy, which we will be reading in preparation and anticipation of the 3-hour film.
People keep insisting that it's a placeholder time for IMDb and
God,
stuff.
God, I hope so.
But the movie is... like a month away, or a month, 2 months away.
Yeah.
And they still haven't changed it. Could you I might have to request that Saturday off so we can go watch it, drag you back home and record you while you're half drunk.
Well, which I don't know if we'll be able to do if that movie's 3 hours long.
I'm going to go ahead and request that Saturday off.
Yeah. And then our next two bonus episodes on Thursday the 14th, we are reviewing the short story, The Werewolf, by Amakatsu, and Hef will be here for that one.
I can't wait. I listened to it again while I was in Texas.
I love it. I think it's really good. And then our next Alien episode is on September 21st with Alien versus Predator Requiem. So after that, we'll only have 2 more episodes to go.
We're getting there.
And thank you to our patrons, Abigail the First, Breaker of Chains, Mother of Dragons, and...
Logan,
the Full Metal Patron. And thank you to Ben, the Fourth,
Patron of Hope.
and Four Horsemen Comics and Gaming, which you can visit at the Morgantown Mall in Morgantown, West Virginia, the Mall at Robinson in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And you can visit Ronald in the Third Grandpa's of Christmas in his straitjacket in room number 12 at the Georgetown University Hospital.
I just love how you're able to get that all off of your tongue without stuttering.
Oh, I don't even have to ramble off the socials like I used to have to.
I get tongue-tied so easily.
Yeah. Well, I read Drake a lot of Dr. Seuss.
Okay.
So that helps.
I'll go have a kid just so I can read Dr. Seuss.
And you don't have to have a kid to read Dr. Seuss. Yeah. I just wouldn't stand on a street corner and read it. People don't like that.
I'll go up to other people's children and start reading.
You won't believe how wet they let that wet pet get!
Stay scary, everybody.
I like to box my socks. I love to box my gox. I box my gox in yellow socks. When you spend every night reading books to your kids, you gotta make your own fun sometimes.
This will be the last time I bring up Texas. I got to hear so much Coco Melon that the songs are still playing in my head.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Should have been watching Bluey.
I also saw a lot of Bluey.
Good. Bluey good.
Bluey good. Coco Melon bad.
Bluey good. We're going to do a Bluey intro one day. It's going to be Daniel.
We'll do a TikTok.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Okay, bye.
Bye.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share, and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher, and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to the Horror of Babylon podcast at gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, and all other major podcast apps. Stay scary.